Hi, today is May 14, 2016, and this is Moviews Podcast number 160. I'm Todd Agassawar with my good friend John Westfall, and he actually wrote that out for me so I wouldn't forget.
And then you went off script, but that's okay. I've only been doing somewhere I have, and I can find out very quickly how many of these I've done with you. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I've taken to actually writing out what I know you say by heart now at the beginning of every single one of these. But it's taken me this long.
Well, you know, I've pronounced Don's name incorrectly, so someday I'll call you something else.
I look forward to that, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is like my 86th episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've done more than half of all of these Mobile Views.
Yes, I have. I have legitimate cred on Mobile Views now.
Absolutely. All righty. And we need to ask back some of our friends who've been on before and ask some friends who have never been on before that we really should get on. But
that's true. We do have some people that I can think of that we should invite on. So in the near future, we shall do that.
Right. And they may even know who they are. But
They might.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple of things. Two things I wanted to catch up on is since I've been talking about VPNs, free VPNs, because, you know, I'm cheap. I don't really actually want to pay for something like John does.
Yeah, but I'm paranoid.
So, thing number one, well, both of the first two items are Opera-based. One is Opera introduced a Opera VPN for iOS, which is free. And this is not a browser. This is an actual VPN that you know, installs a VPN profile. You turn it on, and you are, in theory at least, safer.
Yeah, I installed it and played around with it a little bit. Looks like it works pretty well.
Yeah, well, I installed it too. I played around with it. Seems like it worked, except for one thing, and I don't know if you ran into this, John. I can't turn it off reliably.
Ah, yeah, it really doesn't like to turn off.
No.
I had to go into the app and turn it off in the app, because if I turned it off
in settings,
through the settings, it kept reestablishing itself.
Right, that's what I ran into. So that's kind of a lesson learned. So do what John did, not what I did, which is go into settings and repeatedly try to turn it off. And it says, no, you really didn't mean that.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn you back on.
Which I believe, and I can test this out, because I also have the private internet access app as well. And I don't think it has that same behavior. Now, I will tell people, if they do have both private internet access and Opera VPN, mm-hmm. and I assume other VPNs on their smartphone, on an iPhone, they kind of fight in a sense, because they install a new profile under user VPN profiles.
Right, right.
And I had to kind of toggle over and say, no, I actually want to connect to this one or that one.
Right.
So right now I'm connecting up through private internet access, and I'll try to kill it in settings instead of in the app, and we'll see if it shows the same sort of angry reconnecting.
Right.
Yeah, it's doing it too. So it must be a... just the way that these are implemented, if the app is running, it tries its hardest to keep that VPN connected, which is, I guess, what you'd want it to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, go to the app, turn it off, not to settings, where you would think you should turn it off, being an experienced iOS user. You go to settings to do things. Not for these, apparently. Okay. So, I've Opera VPN for iOS. John and I have both tried it. It looks like it works. It's free. It is annoying until you know which end of it to turn off. That's the app end, not the settings end. Okay, and the second thing is surprised me a little. So I've been playing with the Opera VPN built into their desktop browser developer edition. And up until earlier this week, must have been some kind of update that I ran that I didn't really think about. For the first week or two after its release, the way the VPN part of Opera Browser worked was you clicked on the little VPN icon in the left part of the address bar. There's an on-off switch. You turn it on. You tell it which country you want to be apparently exiting from or entering from, and it worked. But after some update, you now have to be in private viewing mode in order to use the VPN portion of the browser. I don't understand why that's a requirement, but it is.
I could see someone telling Opera that their VPN wasn't working right because a tracking cookie was able to track them or something that was already on their device.
Mm.
So this might be a way for Opera to make sure that you are as anonymous as possible because you're already in private viewing mode, so all of your locally stored cookies and caches won't be used, and then you're also in the VPN.
Right. By the way, one other thing, though, is that if you are using the VPN app, not the VPN, well, I don't think they have a VPN for their browser on iOS, but if you're using the VPN app and you ask yourself where you are, it'll show you where you are geographically. Hmm. Unless you do like a Find My IP from within the browser, a browser, and then it'll show you as being, I think, somewhere in California.
Yeah, Apple Discovery services are an interesting thing to look at, and I believe they are, instead of using your IP, they also look at your wireless network. And right. So
and GPS, presumably.
Yeah, and GPS and all that. So it's very hard, actually, on an iOS device, if the programmer knows the right API to use and doesn't just rely on IP location services, right. It's really hard to spoof your location on iOS.
Right, which is really what the way you would want it to be, right? I mean, well, at least the way I want it to be. I don't want my location to be spoofed.
Yeah, but it's really hard for me to take over Don Sorcinelli's house. I mean, that was how I did it when he mentioned it last week, how at some point I had... So what Don alluded to was that at some point in the past, when we were all using Foursquare quite a bit, I created a venue next to his house and named it Cobra Command. And I became mayor of that venue, and then I started checking in at his house repeatedly until one day out of 30, I caught him that he hadn't checked in, so I became mayor of his house. The way I did that was I had a jailbroken or an unlocked Android device at the time, and I had a spoof GPS app, so I could turn on that GPS, it plugged me right next to his house, I could check in, and then turn off the GPS. So not exactly the most ethical of things to do, but it was really funny to be 200 miles away and dethrone Don as the mayor of his own house.
Okay, so Opera VPN, desktop browser version, working a little differently after the update. I'm not sure I approve, but it is what it is. So it's their app or it's their software. They can do what they want. I would prefer they leave my history and those kind of things alone personally. You know, I'm not trying to hide. I just want to be safe when I'm, say, at a public hotspot like, you know, in a coffee shop or traveling in an airport or something like that. It's not that I'm trying to be in a true stealth mode. I just want to, like...
So you say.
Well, that's for our conspiracy theory podcast.
Yeah, that's a different podcast. That's a podcast that other people have not heard.
That's right. I have heard of, but not heard.
Yeah, I mean, it's on Conspiracy View 753 now.
Yeah,
but,
we've
got
a lot of those. Yeah.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. They'll find them when, you know, they find our bodies and, you know, trace back all the clues. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll call them the Y files or something. But anyway, one thing I have, there's a new app I have not tried. It's for Android. It's called Basic for Android. And yeah, Basic, the programming language. If you look at it, look for RFO, Basic. And that apparently takes it basic to Androids. And the interesting thing about it is, aside from having an actual programming language on your Android phone, which really you could. I mean, there's a couple other programming languages I think you can install. But it has access to graphics and audio and sensors and networking and all that stuff. So you, in theory at least, it sounds like you can write some interesting applications on your phone or Android tablet. So it's free. There's a user guide available. So if that's something, you know, you enjoy doing, you're fussing around on your little tiny computer that you call your Android phone or tablet, go for it.
You know, I always joke that I'm the only programmer I don't know that I know that didn't learn Basic at some point. So
really?
Yeah, I started off my programming history for no real reason started off learning Pascal.
Ah.
And I played with Borland Delphi in the late 90s, and that was kind of my first – that's where I released my first apps and everything else. So I can read Basic, and I can tinker with Basic, but I never actually learned Basic formally in any way.
So this is an age difference thing. This is a generation gap. So my generation, you either learned you learned Basic, basically. prior to that, it was Fortran and COBOL and stuff like that on the, you know, on the mainframes. But I think I was the first generation to actually have a microcomputer, you know, pre-IBM PC, the Apple II, that sort of thing. TRS-80 Model 1. I still have my TRS-80 Model 1.
That's because you're loyal.
And old.
But potentially,
yeah,
yes.
Your generation, yeah, Pascal makes sense.
Yeah, and it was really, to this day, I don't know why I chose Delphi and didn't choose VB. Because VB would have been kind of the same thing as Borland Delphi. I think it was because VB always required runtime files, and Delphi could compile.
Didn't Delphi compile, this is the wrong part of the country. This is Don's part of the country. Wicked fast?
Yeah, it did. It was a pretty quick thing to program in, and it ran pretty quick, and you didn't need any of those VB runtimes to package with when you packaged it up. You could just send out your EXE.
Right, it compiled to a real binary.
Yeah.
Now, I know it's from Borland. Is it descended from Borland Turbo Pascal, or are they two completely? I reused Delphi briefly, but I can't remember what the relationship is.
I don't think it's a direct descendant, because Delphi was always object-oriented Pascal.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Although you could do command line stuff. You could compile command line programs and things like that with it. So
okay.
You didn't always have to be doing object-oriented.
Okay. Okay, now the next thing. So, you know, as I said, I haven't tried it. I'm planning to. I'm going to install it at some point and fuss with it and see what it's like to write little basic programs on my Android phone. That's always kind of fun to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Next item up is an Apple-y thing, and that is Google's Gboard. G as in Google, Gboard, one word, for iOS. Did you install it on yours?
So I downloaded it on my desktop just to have it in my purchase so that I could grab it later easily. But I have not fooled around with it yet. Have you played with it?
Yeah, I did. So Gboard for iOS is an alternate keyboard, you know, like Swift.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other one that I use, actually?
There's a bunch of alternate keyboards out there.
But, you know, well, Nuance has one. And is that Swift? What's? Let me look at it now.
The one I've been using for animated GIFs or GIFs has been Slash Keyboard. And it's worked pretty well, but I figure the Google one might be a little bit of a step up. I just haven't gotten around playing with it yet.
Okay, so keyboards. I have Microsoft Word Flow. I guess I don't have whatever Nuance has. And then I have the Swift key thing. But in any case, so it's one of many alternate keyboards for iOS. And as John said, among other things, it can do emoji. But what I found really interesting is that its real strength is that you can search for something from the keyboard. So it's got a little, you know, address bar you can search for things in. And then you can automatically paste that result into whatever it is you're typing in, you know, a document file or an email message. So, you know, if I'm writing to John saying, hey, John, I just read about this new app, and I can go, oh, wait, where's the link to send to John? I can search for it and paste it right into the email from the keyboard without having to, you know, switch between the browser and the email app, and boom, it's there. Or if, you know, I'm writing notes to myself and I want to search for a reference about whatever it is I'm writing about and pasted that into my document. I think it's really handy. You know, I have not been using any of the alternate keyboards because, quite frankly, they get in my way sometimes. But I think this one I'm still using it. I have not turned it off after, you know, 2 days or so of using it. So Gboard for iOS, I recommend it. I even installed it on my iPad because I think it has a lot of promise.
Yeah, I think I'll be playing with it very shortly because I like Slash Keyboard, but it doesn't have the built-in search, I don't think. It might. It's got a lot of options I haven't fully explored, but I'll have to play around with it.
And I'll say this, you know, although everybody does gesture typing now, you know, where you're kind of slashing around the keyboard typing, the Google's Gboard for iOS does a pretty good job. The only thing I would say is it doesn't seem to suggest the next word like Apple's keyboard does. So I wish it did that, but, you know, that's a very minor thing in my opinion. You know, I guess I don't want to be too predictable in any case.
Do you use those suggested words a lot?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, for some reason, I have never got into them. And occasionally I'll tell myself, you know what, give your thumbs a rest and just try it. And I'm always happy with it. I'm always happy that it has what I generally want to say and it speeds me up. But for some reason, my brain has never switched to default looking at those words. I kind of ignore them by default.
Yeah, the next word prediction that Apple's keyboard, I think, does is often quite right, probably because I'm a very boring writer. And, you know, apparently I write what 99% of everybody else would write as the next word, you know, the dog has fleas or whatever it is. So I find it very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next item I find shocking. You wrote this in our show notes for our topic discussion topics, and I am shocked, John. I can't even say it out loud.
So this week, I deleted the Overcast app, and I went back to the native horrible podcast app.
Can people hear me shaking my head on the podcast?
I knew this would get your attention. So let me explain why. First of all, one of the things, this all started with me reading, I can't remember if this was one of our friends, it was one of our friends either on Twitter or on a couple of news groups that we're subscribed to, was saying something about the only reason he used the native iOS podcast app was mm-hmm. because it had Siri integration.
Yes, I remember that. It was on a mailing group that we're on.
Yeah, and I thought, well, gee, that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that. And then I started thinking, well, what am I using Overcast really for? What features of it am I really using? Mm. And I realized that I only have like two podcasts I listen to. And Overcast is doing a great job of getting them downloaded and all that. But of course, the native app does that too. And then it hit me that I really wasn't using Overcast for most of its features. And I still have, and this is going to sound very petty, a little bit of a complaint about Overcast.
Okay.
Back when Overcast was paid software, I purchased it.
Okay.
And the little banner that was, purchase Overcast went away. And then when Overcast switched to a subscription model, mm-hmm. the little button that popped up that said, become a patron of Overcast never popped up because I had the paid version, on my device.
And just,
that little button never popped up.
Yeah.
Well, then I reformatted my device about a year ago.
Okay.
I reinstalled everything.
Okay.
And when I logged into Overcast, that little be a patron button popped up. And I thought, well, surely because I purchased it in the past, as soon as I restore my purchases, that will go away. Mm-hmm. And it didn't.
Hmm.
And I reached out on Twitter and said, hey, is this a bug or is this something you're going to fix? Because it seems like if I paid for this when it was still pay software, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it'd be nice if I wasn't bothered to still support it. I already supported it once, and that was the model under which I bought it.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's not a decent thing to support software over and over, but give the user a choice to not see your nag screen or your nag button. And I never got a reply. And so that sort of soured me a little bit on Overcast. It was kind of a, I don't know, it felt like it was a gratitude sort of thing.
Okay.
And so I've been using Siri more. The next topic that we'll talk about will be how I've been using Siri a lot more lately.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what, maybe I'll give the native podcast app a try again and see if it's any better, especially with iOS 10 on the horizon. We'll be seeing what that is entailing next month at WWDC. And so, yeah, I went back.
I am nearly speechless.
Is it because of my pettiness over a little button that says, please support Overcast?
Well, it's not the pettiness. It's just that I thought we were in agreement that the podcast app was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing that people should be, corporally punished for.
Yeah, I agree. And I used it again, and I realized that it isn't the prettiest, but it does seem to work. And it had issues working in the past. So maybe there have been some changes that I haven't known that we've never noticed on it.
You know, ever since you recommended I switch to Overcast.
I realize that. Yes, I do.
I have not used the podcast app. And I'll tell you why. I don't know if they've fixed it since I haven't even looked at it. I put it, I don't think you can delete the podcast app, but I put it away in a folder where I don't have to look at its ugly icon.
Yep.
The reasons I switched were, one, it was not downloading my podcast correctly. Sometimes it would simply not download a podcast, even when I manually tried to force it, or it would delete something that I didn't think should be deleted yet. Basically, it was just not behaving properly. The other thing that was a problem is that the user interface, the buttons were way too small. So, the way I use it is basically when I get to my parking space, I wanted to the way I had it, the old setup I had, I would need to either pull the headphone jack out to stop the audio or press a button. The buttons were way too small, so I was just pulling the headphone jack out to stop playback, essentially, once I parked the car before I turned off the engine. And basically, Overcast solved that problem. His buttons are nice and big. They're easy to touch. I just pop that in or tap it, and it was done. paused it or stopped it or whatever. So I really like that. I thought that the way it handled deleting podcasts automatically was exactly the way to handle it. So yeah, I'm continuing to use it. And quite frankly, Siri has become so incompetent, at least in my automobile, which is the same one I've been driving for many years. It's an old car. I just stopped using Siri. In fact, the only time I use Siri is by accident. Usually when a podcast or an audiobook is misinterpreted by Siri as saying her name and it stops whatever it's doing and it was waiting for me to say something and they just say cancel or, you know, something. And it never does. I'm not sure what you're supposed to say.
You just say something that we can't repeat on a rated G podcast.
So at any rate, I am still shocked and aghast. Although I do.
Well, and it could be very well that I will find out in a week or two that it's not downloading what I need it to and that my fat fingers are too big for the buttons. And yeah. So I will go back to Overcast. And the worst that will happen is I'll see that button again that kind of annoys me.
And
a little,
I do have some a workaround for that I'll mention after your next item, which I'm curious about, your next Siri related item.
Yeah, so Siri and I have been getting close lately.
Yeah. Again, shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm one of the people that hates the idea of talking incomprehensibly to his phone.
Yeah.
But I guess if I could order my phone around to do things, I guess I'm okay with that. So this started about 2 years ago. I had a couple of Wi-Fi enabled light or power outlets.
Okay.
You know, these little wall warts that you then plug something into. I bought them from China. They were semi-reliable. They didn't always work, but when they worked, it was great. You could turn on things. You know, I remember I had them on the Christmas tree lights at one point, mm-hmm. and then I had them on, you know, bedside lamp and stuff like that. And I kind of missed, when they died, I kind of missed them. And so I'd always been on the lookout for a Wi-Fi outlet that I could use. And I found the iHome ISP5 Wi-Fi smart plug.
Okay.
And we have a link there that we can put in the show notes.
Sure, will do.
One of the things that I could have gone with the Belkin Wemo outlets.
Which is a very well-known brand. And
very well-known, very product. Expensive.
Yeah, it is.
$50 for an outlet. I wasn't quite ready to pay that. But the iHomes were about $33 an outlet. And I thought, well, that's not great. My ideal price point is around $20, $25 for this, but maybe I can deal with $33. So I bought a pack of them, bought three of them. And I set up my lamps in my living room with them. And they're HomeKit compatible plugs. They're also compatible with Amazon Echoes and Nests and a bunch of other random stuff. So I thought, well, this will work out fun. And I set it up and it was working fine. I reformatted the firmware, which they recommend you do. And it worked fine before, worked fine after. But the Siri integration was what I was most interested in. Would it actually work? And so I started saying things to Siri like, hey, Siri, turn on the living room lights, or hey, Siri, turn on living room light one, or turn on the bedroom lights, or all those commands. And my amazement, they all work flawlessly. You there?
Yeah, I'm going to – hang on. I'm going to – okay, little technical difficulty. We are back.
And so as I was saying, I got these things up and running. And to my surprise, the Siri integration has been pretty flawless. I can say, hey, Siri, whatever, and about 2 seconds later it happens. Or if it's through my watch, it takes about 4 seconds, 5 seconds. And it's just been amazing to me how reliable it has been. I had a friend here last weekend, and my joke is that whenever I have a friend over and I have new technology to show off, it never works right. And amazingly, it worked every single time. I'd be at the front door to my apartment. I'd raise my watch and say, hey, Siri, turn on the living room lights, unlock the door. And as soon as we walked in, the lights would pop on. It looked pretty magical. So I'm really happy with these little iHome ISP5 Wi-Fi smart plugs.
Nice, nice. And how much do they cost again?
About $33.
$33, okay. So a lot less than the Wemos. You can buy about three of them for the cost of two Wemos, essentially.
And they are... and they are HomeKit compatible. And one of the rumors this year with WWDC is that HomeKit will finally get a little more useful. And so I'm really hoping that that's the case, because that's kind of been something I've looked for. I haven't been doing a lot in home automation, but I've had my eye on everything I buy has to say it's HomeKit compatible, just because I'm hoping one day that HomeKit will be really useful.
Yeah, I guess I'll wait for that before I buy anything. I was going to buy some plug, you know, smart type plug things to work with the Amazon Echo. But, you know, now that you mentioned this, I think, well, I might as well wait. Maybe there'll be something that works with both Echo and Siri. Who knows? we will. I'll wait and see for a couple of what next month, June, right?
This does.
What's that?
Yeah, but this the iHome is the iHome is advertised as working with Echo.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So awesome. You could get these and play around with the Echo.
All right, so two more items I wanted to add before we sign off on this podcast. So I mentioned that my former setup in the car required me plugging in a audio mini plug into my iPhone, you know, as well as power to keep it powered up while I'm driving along in the mornings and afternoons to play my podcasts and audiobooks and such. But the Griffin device that I've been using for, gosh, I don't know, 5 years, 4 or 5 years, finally gave up the ghost. I mean, just physically it started to tear apart. You know, I could tell that the wires were going to become unraveled pretty soon and become unplugged from the unit. And it was not it's something that was soldered in. So it's not something I just plug, take out and put it in, that sort of thing. I guess I could have taken it apart and tried to solder it back in, but it seemed like way too much work. And I think the radio component on it was not working all that well. Anyway, it's an FM transceiver type of thing. So what I did is a couple of months ago, I bought a device that didn't work. And I posted a not flattering review on Amazon. They took offense to it. But it just basically doesn't work. I don't care what they say. Recently, however, since I saw my Griffin, loyal Griffin device dying, I bought a no-name brand instead of another Griffin, because Griffin just doesn't have what I want to do. And I don't even know what the brand is. It might be T10. I don't know if that's the model. But basically, it's an Amazon. It was about $24 or so. It's called the T10 Car Wireless MP3. And basically, you plug it into your cigarette lighter in your car. It can either plug into an auxiliary audio jack in your car. I don't happen to have one. Or transmit via Bluetooth from your phone to transmit via FM transceiver to your FM radio, which is the way I've been doing it. And instead of using a mini jack cable to my phone, it uses Bluetooth, just like the one that I bought earlier that didn't work. This one fortunately works. Again, a T10 Car Wireless MP3. And it has a couple of interesting features. Feature number one is has a micro SD card slot, which they call the TD card. That you can stick in a micro SD card full of MP3s and other music, and it will play from it. So you don't even need a phone, really. So I thought that was kind of neat. I haven't tried that. The other thing I really liked is that it has some controls right on the device that's sticking out of the cigarette, what used to be called cigarette lighter. I don't think it actually lights cigarettes anymore. And that is, you can pause start button. So, you know, I can just tap that to pause something. And a forward-backward button, which the Griffin didn't have. At least I don't think it had. And also has a volume control. Although, of course, you know, basically I just prime it fairly high up and then use the car's volume control to control the overall volume. But at any rate, for $24 or so, it works great so far. I've been using it for the last couple of days. It pairs as soon as I turn the car on. It takes maybe 30 seconds to pair it. My phone automatically. I don't have to do anything. And I'm ready to go. It has, I plugged in, there's a little USB port, so you can plug in a micro USB if you've got an Android phone I have an iPhone, so I use a Lightning cable that I plug in to keep my phone powered up while I'm driving. And it, like I said, it works pretty darn well. The other thing I found interesting is it shows me the voltage level of my car when I turn it on. So I assume when my battery starts going bad, I can look at it and notice my voltage is a little low. I think it's cranks at about 13 or 14 volts. So that might be a little handy diagnostic for all I know. But in any case, about, like I said, less than $25. I think it was $22, $23, $24. So like a T10 Car Wireless MP3. I'll probably do a little review of it on Mobile Views and a separate blog item. I like it so much, and something I hope to be doing more of on Mobile Views in the days and weeks to come. And the last item I wanted to mention is some of you may have been noticed there's been a lot of news lately about the long TSA lines at airports in the U.S. And the warning is that they're going to become even longer as the summer travel season approaches. One of the things I learned from reading an article, I think in USA Today or someplace, is that TSA actually has apps for iOS and Android that gives you crowdsourced wait times for a number of airports in the U.S. So you might want to... It's free. It's from the TSA, although they say, you know, this is not official data. This is crowdsourced data. So right now, I'm looking at San Francisco, and it says there are no delays And the checkpoint wait times, according to this app, you know, crowdsourced stuff, is 1 to 10 minutes, which is, to me, unbelievably fast. And you can post a wait time. So you can, you know, you can contribute to this if, you know, if you so desire. I don't travel a lot, but I have been traveling a little bit lately, and I think I'll use this in my next couple of trips. It also has airport status information. You can see a little map, see which airports, and delay status for each one. You can kind of tap on it and see, you know, see, for example, at Denver, you know, no destination specific delays. It tells you what you can bring. It has some videos. So at any rate, my TSA from TSA, crowdsourced app. I don't know if I recommend it, but I'm certainly going to try and play with it as I do a little bit of traveling this summer and report back on what I learn. John, you drive all over the place, right? You hardly ever fly anymore.
Now, the big question I have is, yeah, but I do fly occasionally. Do I have to take off my shoes and belt to use the app?
Hopefully not. Hopefully
yeah, that's,
not.
That's what I hope, so.
But yeah, any rate, so my TSA. Alrighty, I think that is it, unless you have something else you want to add, John.
I think I'm good. It was we got in, we got out.
Yep, a little bit of audio problem, so probably a good time to... I don't know why we're having audio problems this week, but in any case, this has been Mobile Views Podcast number 160, Tadagasawar, John Westfall. We will talk to you next time.